www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. How are you?
All right, thanks. Not bad. Go on then. Cheer update.
Cheer update. Well, finally, I logged onto my cheer machine this morning.
And?
Expecting to say still zero blocks farmed or zero plots farmed. And yeah. I had two cheer.
Woo, two.
Two whole cheer. And then the price of cheer crashed again today.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it'd be good if it wasn't for the fact that the price just keeps going down and down and down. But then, you know, you don't have to sell them, do you?
No, I just hold on to them. So I'm now going to come. I'm going to be a crypto bro now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you'll have to grow a beard and, you know.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Do you not have to grow a beard?
No.
Oh, no, Robert doesn't have a beard.
They're much more. I think they're probably a little more right-wing than beards, most of them.
So red braces?
Bros, yeah. Yeah, okay. Braces and yeah.
Fair enough. Sounds good. Okay, so let's dive into our conversation for today. Now, funny enough, talking about cheer, we talked about fast technology and NVMe as a big sort of side to that in terms of how you do your mining. You know, we know all of that. And we're going to talk NVMe again today, NVMe 2.0. And we're lucky enough to have Amber Huffman from Intel joining us again today. How are you doing, Amber?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So I was looking and it's been nearly, almost not quite, 3 years since the last time you and I spoke together. And that was at
Flash Memory Summit. I miss seeing you face to face.
Yep, that's true. Flash Memory Summit. There's me trying to think what it is, and I could not think of it. Flash Memory Summit. Yeah, and that was great because we were in face to face, which we haven't been able, none of us have been able to do for a while. And I think at the time that was probably pretty early on in terms of the development of NVMe, and we had a great discussion then. But before we go any further, it might be great if you could just spend a couple of seconds just introducing yourself and, you know, a little bit of background to NVMe itself, and then we can dig into what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, my name's Amber Huffman. I'm a Intel fellow at Intel Corporation, and I'm also the president of NVM Express. We started NVMe back in 2009. Myself and Peter Anufrik and several other folks were on the ground floor. We delivered the first specification in 2011, and really what we were seeing was the explosion in PCIe SSDs. If you think about Fusion IO or Micron, several folks were out there with products in the market, and we felt like the way that you would actually get that everywhere is standards. So it's really the key to standards to have that broad scale adoption. So we had our first product ship in 2014. And then over the past, you know, 5 or 6 years since NVMe has started to ship, we have just seen it explode in the enterprise market, the cloud market, and the client market. And so anywhere where you're seeing solid state storage be very important, you're seeing NVMe be a very dominant interface, including if we go to BGA packaged SSDs. So any type of form factor from your mainframe all the way to your phones.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably not obvious to people that it is in mobile devices, you know, like phones. And, you know, it's everywhere, effectively.
Exactly. And that's one of the challenges we've seen with what we're going to talk about today on NVMe 2.0. We've had such explosive growth that one of the things we have to do is make sure we cleanly refactor the specification so we can keep growing for another decade and really support the different use cases because obviously those are very different depending on which market we're going after.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, Martin, I mean, just from our perspective, we talk about NVMe a lot. And it is amazing to think that it has been around for 10 years in one form or another in terms of development, but also the fact that it is now so ubiquitous and really, you know, it's that sort of platform of choice, isn't it, really?
But it is certainly for anybody, got me mobile devices, consumer devices, and most people's boot drives these days in their PCs will be NVMe, your desktops will be NVMe, servers. Yeah, it's become, I think it's amazing, but we have one storage protocol which is covering everything from something you carry in your pocket all the way to the largest service you'll see in data centers.
Okay, so when we met 3 years ago, we were talking, I think we did a good introduction to the NVMe protocol, and we knew that sort of came from a bit of a rewrite and because of some of the issues with the protocols that had gone before, like SCSI. And we don't really need to go back over that again, because I think we explained it quite well. But about 2 years ago, Jay Metz did a recording, and we talked about release 1.4. Now, funny enough, Jay likes to talk, as I'm sure you know. And we had to split that into a two-episode set of podcasts. So we had two recordings. But obviously, that was one scenario, and I remember at the time him saying that there was a bit of redevelopment going on, there was a bit of change going on. And it sounds to me like what you've started to introduce there, Amber, is that the 2.0 protocol is sort of continuing that discussion, that sort of evolution. Do you want to sort of set the scene as to why that's been necessary? And then we can dive down into some of the features in 2.0.
Yeah, what we did is when we first developed NVMe at the baseline, we ended up with like 150-page spec. It was super, super thin and very focused on PCIe storage. And so basically delivering high bandwidth, low latency storage and overcoming bottlenecks of where past storage interfaces had really been developed for hard drives in mind, really developing from the start of thinking about storage class memory in mind and reducing and removing any bottlenecks. Now, when we went to NVMe over Fabric several years into, as we were seeing that explosive growth and seeing it where people wanted not just within their local server, but or their laptop, but being able to basically have an infrastructure based on NVMe. When we went to NVMe over Fabrics, what we did is we kind of cheated. We basically didn't refactor the base specification, which assumes PCIe, and we just did kind of this addendum on the side, kind of a wart on the side of the spec of this is how you would do Fabrics with the existing of what we created, and here's what changed and whatnot. The thing that's continued to happen is NVMe over Fabrics has continued to grow. We've seen both RDMA and we saw a TCP version brought on board. We're also seeing the base PCIe continue to grow with things, and whether regardless of what your underlying transport is, we have new features, whether you talk to key values, zoned namespaces, other things, and people want to use those features, not dependent on what protocol or transport's underneath. So the real thing that we've done is that explosion has caused us to, how do we refactor cleanly? And so it's getting where you have a base specification that's not aware of what transport's underneath, whether it's RDMA, TCP, PCIe, anything to come. Then we have separate specifications for command sets, such as zoned namespaces, block, key value and whatnot. And then we have that modular transport layer where you can plug in whether it's TCP or RDMA or PCIe. So this allows us then to just move forward very confidently. So the problem you have is what everybody sees is we as humans, we can only understand so much complexity. And so when you go from 150-page spec to now you've got, with the growth, you've got 600 pages of documents or whatnot, people go in and they try to make one change just to get this feature for client or enterprise or cloud, and they inadvertently screw up something that was for some other marketer out there in some way. So what we're really doing is just trying to clean up the complexity, refactor the specification into these clean layers, so you know exactly when you make a particular change to a spot, what is that impacting? Because, you know, if we've got our infrastructures all running on NVMe, if you go in and make a minor change to an inbox driver for a new feature and it craters some other features, that's a major problem. So that's another key piece of this refactor, is to make sure that people can still innovate. You know, we still have things where people, whether we talk key value or zone namespaces as two examples, we don't know how successful either of those are going to be. We want to make sure that people can continue to innovate, try new things, but not mess up the very, very large install base and what continues to grow. So that was really the impetus.
Okay. And I guess at the end of the day, any protocol, any standard that you're going to have such a wide impact into the industry with, you're going to need to look at that every so often and say, do you know what, we need to refocus it. We need to redo it just to allow us to get to that level of scale. Because if you don't, you end up with a real mess, and you end up with something that becomes unsupportable to the point that you are introducing risk. And, you know, half of what you're saying there is reducing some of the risk that could be brought in by not having the ability to make those changes very flexibly.
That's absolutely the case. And what we would like to see is that we continue a healthy trajectory for NVMe, where we're doing our own house cleaning, you know, kind of doing our spring cleaning every so often, so that we can keep evolving versus that we get that so complex that we fall under our own weight. And we want to just be on the proactive side of that so that we can continue to evolve as the industry needs us to.
Okay. So as well as I'm going to say rewrite, I'm using that term, you know, refactoring you, I think you may have said, whatever term you want to use, but there are new features as well. And I've listed some of these on here, and I'm really interested to see how some of these are going to work and why they're there. So do you want to give us a bit of an overview of what the new features are? And then we can pick some of the highlights out and try and dig into why they might be interesting.
Yeah, I would say that one of the critical pieces that doesn't sound exciting is something called namespace types. And so the critical piece of namespace types is it's an infrastructure capability, so that in the past, there was often an assumption that it's always a blocked command set on top. With this namespace type, you can actually figure out if a device has several different capabilities, like they might have a key value portion, but they have another portion that's a block, you can actually probe and figure out, is that namespace a block namespace? Is it a key value? Is it a zone namespace? Is it another type that we might add on in the future? So the first thing we did is this namespace type allows flexible command sets on top. So that's an infrastructure piece building towards the future. Then we directly built on top of it. One item we did was zoned namespaces. What zoned namespaces allows you to do is, if you have a physical media where, for example, it has not an ability to take a tremendous number of writes, you may have 3-bit per cell, 4-bit per cell, 5-bit per cell NAND or whatnot, but you may have it mixed with other types of memory. Maybe you have a storage class memory in there as well. Zone namespaces allows you to declare on the physical media where are certain things, the media types different or not. So that way you can treat them differently of how much you write or read from particular areas and whatnot. The next feature is key value. So this really, rather than accessing based on a block address, you're accessing based on a key and key value pairs. We also have something called endurance group management. So on this one, it kind of relates to zone namespaces. You may have where you have certain groupings of blocks that you're trying to understand. We end up calling them NVM sets, but allows you to understand when is something getting close to its wear out and enable you to do a better wear leveling of the device. There's then some less exciting things. Like, for example, we have a simple copy command. You've seen this in other command set, but we finally just decided it was time to add it. Another critical thing that we see in data center infrastructure is if I have multiple controllers on a single device, and I may have that because I'm looking at a dual ported device or being able to plug into a fabric type of infrastructure, how do I update the firmware in a coordinated fashion across all the controllers? Because I really want them all to be on the same firmware, but I need to do that in a way that I don't have to bring down my machine in order to update the firmware and have it be coordinated. So that's an update of trying to make sure that that's well handled. And then there's things like on security of trying to do originally there was a 16-bit ECC or CRC was the norm back 10 years ago. We really have, 32 and 64-bit CRC extensions now to make sure that people can have that better protection of their data. So those are the types of features we've added.
Okay, brilliant. I just want to bring Martin in for a second. Martin, the namespace types, for me, first of all, I think sounds really interesting, simply because if I've got it right and I understand it right, this is an opportunity to say that if you've got a computational storage device that does, say, a key value store in one portion of it, but also has, say, a cache in it in other parts of it, you can now have a composite device that could actually offer many different services. And that could be really, really interesting to see how that develops.
You see, you think that's really interesting, actually. I'm going to wind it back a bit. Amber said something, the idea of thinking about how we handle multi-controllers and actually allows to update firmware in such a way that you're minimizing downtime. For somebody who's on an operational focus, having people actually think about how this works within a standard is actually really exciting, because people don't tend to, they leave it to the actual implementer to come up with some way of doing this. So yeah, namespaces, very interesting for the future, but for me sitting over an operational team, I'm much more interested in these practical things.
Okay, fair enough. I won't disagree with that. I mean, to be fair, I think that has been probably a bane of everybody's life, sitting there thinking, how on earth do I do firmware updates? How do I make these changes? And how can I have the confidence that it's done correctly? So I'm not going to diss the fact that that is in there. It sounds great. But getting back to namespace types.
I think, Chris, if you go to where Martin's going, I mean, the fun thing is you can see the different lenses also on the features, right? So some of these features, as data centers are deploying, they're saying, hey, we really need these capabilities. So you can see these less sexy features, right? And then you can see more of the front-footed innovation type of features, like a key value. And so it's a host of all sorts of things.
I think that's been obvious over the evolution of the way that you've developed things, is that there is that strong management focus in there, and there always has been, because there was a separate protocol management definition, wasn't there, originally? So it's clear that that's in there. And without a doubt, it's easy to see that, yes, okay, there's advanced features coming in, but you're very, very much aware that there are still lots of operational challenges that still need to be addressed, and they are being addressed, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. And that's always one of our main discussions, is the balance of making sure we get the things done that people really need in their deployments now versus the cool next thing, and making sure we balance that well.
Okay. From an operational perspective, Martin, what else then do you think is going to be of interest to you? Because, from the perspective of some of these things we've seen here, that some of them could be more advanced, some of them could be used today.
Oh, endurance group management, that's very interesting from an operational point of view. As devices start to age and we try to understand more and more about the wear and how quickly things are going to wear out, that looks really good. But Chris, I don't want to completely derail you talking about the future stuff, because you like talking about future stuff. So let's go back onto name spaces. I think it was interesting, and I think this is interesting across the whole standard. It feels like it's a very extensible standard. It seems like we're now thinking about, almost pluggable, right? Then, okay, we know we're going to extend it and we know we're going to plug new things in. This isn't a standard which is going to be written in stone, but we're going to increment it. We're going to think exactly how we increment standards. So somebody requires a new type of namespace, you should be able to plug it in at some point.
Yeah, and I think perhaps that reflects the fact that hard drives and devices can be more complex than they used to be, especially with the computational storage devices, where we're going to see more intelligence being pushed to that device. And one of the biggest challenges we've talked about over the last, well, ever since we've started talking about computational storage, has been how on earth are you going to both push the data to that device to be managed securely and effectively, and how you're going to push the code to it so that when it does get there, the device can operate on it. Amber, do you think is this going to be where we're headed, that you'll be integral to helping devices like that work?
Yeah, we've actually got a very healthy set of work going on for more than a year now on computational storage. And one of the critical things we have in computational storage is, how do you effectively pass down a quote unquote program to the device? Because what you're going to want to do is to do something interesting. Typically, it's not interesting of just decrypting or just doing a compression or decompression. It's, you want to do, for example, I want to find a needle in the haystack. So I want to filter, take a set of records that are encrypted and compressed and all the rest. And I want to find those records that have, you know, a particular, like if you're looking for a particular name in a database. And so I need to be able to pass off a quote unquote program that talks about, okay, how to decrypt the names field, how to then decompress the names field, how to then you get the names and tell it which one I'm looking for and allocate those, string those together. So that's one of the key things we've been working on, is a very simple way to download a quote unquote program. And also one of the critical things there is it local to the, you know, you have a hardware offload that's on the device that you're utilizing, or it's actually you're passing down some code that would be in a byte language. So we're using an approach where we're using a common byte language that's used in Linux and other places. So that way you can then execute that on a local processor. So computational storage is absolutely one of the key next things you would see in a, I don't know if it'll be NVMe 2.1, but that's been going on for a year, and we have a very active collaboration with SNIA looking at the use cases for computational storage and how does that programming interface go to the device. But we're really focusing again on that very base level of how to get that program infrastructure in place that you would build up over time, because we really don't know computational storage, where is it going to go exactly, and how do we build where software can build on top of it and figure out what are the real use cases that take off.
I think one of the biggest challenges there, without a doubt, and what you're starting to support with things like key value stores, is in some respects the data that's going to be on the devices has to have some degree of structure. Whereas previously we would just have thrown blocks onto a piece of media and have no real idea about where those blocks were or what those blocks were for. You know, the logic or the everything else would be at a higher level in the file system. Now we're doing two things, actually. First of all, we're pushing a degree of intelligence down to the device so the device can say, I understand what this data looks like. But at the same time, you're pushing more control up to the operating system and higher layers to say, here is the device, tell me how you want to make it work. And things like ZNS and the namespace types and so on are giving the host a degree of additional control. But at the same time, the device is getting a degree of additional awareness. So I don't know whether that's entirely deliberate, but it certainly seems to me that we're trying to build the connectivity between the two components with a lot more intelligence than we used to, where, you know, a device was just a device.
I mean, in my opinion, it is deliberate, because the challenge is that what I've seen, so I go back in the day of doing open NAND flash interface and the definitions for the NAND component itself, and in the industry and with JEDEC. And what we found over time is, Any type of initiative where you try to get a very high level to understand the intimate details. I mean, I think if you look at Open Channel has not seen a very broad, you know, wide mass adoption. And part of that is the the intelligence you have to have about the changing of when I go from 3-bit per cell to 4-bit per cell to 5-bit per cell, exactly all the details I have to know about the NAND. So what is the right way that you can expose some level of, hey, this has some wear issues and that has, so what's a level of information that you can pass to the other side so that it can help, but it doesn't have to know everything? And the same thing is happening on computational storage. So when I talk to major cloud customers, they don't have any standard data types. Like even sometimes they get certain amount of data that gets, they get terabytes and terabytes and petabytes of data in a particular format that's just due to a summer intern coding incorrectly in a certain data structure, right? And they're like, they're not going to go back and change that data. They need to be able to go look for the information they need in that data. And so that's another reason why on the computational storage side where we're looking at programs being downloaded, because you need to go, hey, what did this, is this the data that got screwed up by that one intern that one summer? Or is this this well-known data format? And the feedback that we get is that you're never going to get everybody to agree on a data format. So you better make that a part of how you, you know, one of your parameters effectively of your program.
Yeah. And that sort of then leads to this thing that Martin just mentioned, the idea that you might actually be extending the protocol, and that protocol might actually be based on the code that you've just pushed to that device. So rather than querying the device through a key value store, you might query it through an API you've pushed through that code. So the device itself has to just understand how to receive that API call that says, give me all of the records in that bit of data. And that code is the one that's doing that pre-filtering to take out all the stuff that you didn't really want and give you back the real stuff you did want. And now you've created almost like a generic transport protocol for almost any data type, I suppose.
Yeah, and we're going to see how that evolves. Like we really don't have, depending on who you talk to, they think, and depending on their lens, there's a lot of people that feel like there's going to be fixed function on devices that obviously for compression and encryption type of things, that makes a ton of sense. There are some people that feel like you're going to have an FPGA. You know, maybe you have a set of SSDs and you have an FPGA that's doing all the offloads. There are some people that think I'm going to have, you know, I've got a pretty capable processor on a lot of my SSDs. So maybe I just have it run a little bit of code and then I have some fixed function offloads and I need to string them together. But it's going to be really interesting to see what continues to evolve as we keep moving forward, because that's part of why we're trying to make this infrastructure one that it can accommodate a range of those types of futures, because we don't know where it's going to go. And so how do we allow that innovation spot and then build deeper in the places that really gained traction, which is effectively what we did with NVMe from the start, right? We didn't know if NVMe over Fabrics was going to take off. When it did, and then people said they had to have a TCP layer, we've added that protocol. So we really want the market to guide us of where does computational storage go as we start to introduce these capabilities.
Yeah, early days, Martin, really, but potentially really interesting.
Really interesting. I can see lots of usage in the area which I work in. I work in Media Amber. So just thinking about the ability to write a video stream to a piece of hardware and then have it come back, depending on the API, in a different format, re-encoded, re-encrypted, depending how you want it. You could, it almost gives us that idea of that self-describing media type, which is everybody's always wanted to be able to plug in. It tells you what it is, tells you what data it's got on there, and how it might even give you it back in the format which you can use.
Yeah.
Keep searching for the Holy Grail, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? You know, that's what we need to do. And as things get more complex or more complicated, depending on how we, I guess, we phrase it, we do need to try and, I guess, rethink how we're storing data and how we're managing it, because we're very much in a position where it's all about the data, not necessarily just about storing random blocks on a disk. It's much more complex than that now. So that's really important. Speaking of which, did I see something that said that there's hard disk support coming for NVMe?
There is. So in actuality, NVMe never precluded hard drives being part of NVMe. And I cut my teeth on the parallel ATA to serial ATA transition. So I'm familiar with these types of fun things. What we've really done is we will see how much we end up getting native NVMe hard drives. That's still very much a we'll see. And what we saw, for example, in parallel ATA to serial ATA transition, it was really the Marvell bridge chip of the day that really, once that gained enough volume, it was it made sense for people to go native. I don't think we're necessarily at that spot with NVMe, but where we are at is that when NVMe was, 5 years ago, we were plugging NVMe drives into a SCSI infrastructure. And what's really started to change with NVMe over Fabrics is now you're plugging in new cloud and enterprise deployments, you're plugging into an NVMe infrastructure. And so that's what's required, that for hard drives, how are we able to gather the air information and other key capabilities so you can understand, are my hard drives, whether they're NVMe native or whether they are a SATA or a SAS hard drive in the back end, how do I collect that information so I can manage my infrastructure, whatever the data types are at the end of the node? And so that's really what we've done with the hard drive support, is being able to really understand, am I having some problem with this particular hard drive? Is it reaching its end of life that I need to start taking action on it?
Yeah. Is it possibly likely that we'll see an evolution that gets rid of some of the older protocols? And, you know, is it going to be a case that, for instance, on hard drives, that we move to have NVMe just because it makes life easier to have everything on one particular format or standard?
My opinion is it will be wonderful to sunset over time, but I think we still, every time I get into a discussion of, are you going to take away a port of, you know, this goes back to parallel ETA, when we try to take away a port, people would say, hey, I want to plug in. So right now, the fact of the matter is that SAT is very relatively cheap. When it gets to the spot where people are just saying, hey, this is a burden and I really don't want to qualify this anymore, or you see sunset of OS driver support or whatnot. But until somebody basically says you can't have this anymore, I think you'll still see some amount of SATA and SAS hard drives out there for a very long time.
Okay. And I guess to a certain degree as well, we're seeing the zone namespace side of things coming in hard drives as well. So It's a degree of standardization from that perspective. So I don't think there's any harm in that. It's going to be interesting, Martin, to think that would anybody have ever thought that hard drives would have NVMe on them? I mean, of course they could. There's no reason why not, but it just wasn't the way that we would have expected it to go.
I don't think it was, but yet again, it's about the simplification, which is the important thing. Yeah. So we start removing ports, and we've lived through a number of hard disk interfaces anyway. From Sugar, we've lived through IDE, EIDE, and SATA. Yeah. Well, so. Yeah, God, we're old, Chris.
Yeah, sorry.
We're all old. We're just, but it's better than the alternative, right?
So somebody told me about Bus and Tag. I never saw it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so when these new features come out, Amber, I think this is a discussion we've had previously that I've tried to get, and I don't think Jay really answered the question for me, even though I've asked him many times, and that's to understand what happens with existing devices. Because previously, I think some of the features that were there, if you brought out a new device and that new device was running, say, 1.4, and the older devices weren't, it sounded to me that you effectively just got a subset of the features that your device supported. But it sounds like going forward, it would be beneficial if a device could be upgraded in place and actually start running with a newer version of NVMe. Is that likely to be possible? And will that be the way that things will work in the future?
Generally, I doubt that people will do upgrade in place in the field, unless there's some type of skewing methodology that they're doing where they've decided that they can somehow, hey, buy the baseline, and if you pay as you go, we'll update something. So it's something that's built into their business model. But generally, I have seen where people have been less excited about rolling out updates that would bring something further forward because of their concerns about, have they been able to go through a full validation cycle, and do they end up having some challenges that are unforeseen? So I'm seeing that less. The thing that we've really focused on in NVMe is making sure that we maintain backwards compatibility, so that as we keep evolving, if you plug in, you know, an NVMe 1.2 device into a NVMe 2.0 infrastructure, it's still going to work just fine, and making sure that the driver OS evolutions, make sure that we can build that in a scalable way. So everything we've looked at in NVMe 2.0, and the way we even introduced the namespace types, we had a field for namespace types back in the first specification. We just never really used it for, it was always block on pretty much everything we had. So that building those bones in the initial one has allowed us then that as we keep moving forward, you can determine what is attached and then do the features that device supports and still have other features with the, if you have newer devices as well attached.
Yeah. So it's not saying you can't plug a device in that's older, but you're not necessarily going to say, well, this device was a 1.4 device. It can be upgraded to a 2.0 device. You're going to be going out and replacing hardware effectively, both the server and the device.
I think in those things, from what I've perceived thus far, there's the two things are going to be: one is what's your business model, and the second one is going to be, are you comfortable that you could upgrade in place and feel your validation matrix was covered? So I think those are the two key things.
I guess it's a really tricky thing to do, because at the end of the day, any sort of upgrade of that sort of nature could be disruptive, could be accidentally destructive, could be something that needs more processing power. So the device might need to be structured slightly differently. Maybe it needs more memory. So you're almost like quite tightly coupled with the hardware at that point. So it's not a case of just saying, oh yeah, we can put that version of the software on anything. It's a lot more hardware specific, I guess, in that sense.
Typically, from what I've seen of the different SSD vendors, that it tends to be more tightly integrated, their firmware and their drives. And it's really the firmware updates in the field tend to be more security related, of if they run across a patch needed to patch a security vulnerability. But certainly from a OS software perspective, there's updates all the time, and we're always making sure that if we have NVMe devices in the field and you update your driver, that we need to make sure that those are disjoint, right? The drive updates and the driver updates need to make sure that those can happen at different beat rates and not have problems.
Yeah. I guess, Martin, you wouldn't be massively impressed about doing upgrades in place.
Not in place. I can think of a group of companies who might be interested, Dan. The hyperscalers are so big, they may actually think that they may want to, because their estate is so large, and the idea of actually having to do tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of devices with the hardware replaced, they might think it's worth doing.
I think you're hitting on an important one, Martin, of it does matter of if you have an infrastructure in a certain way, it may guide you. I've seen it slightly differently than what you're describing, more so on which version of NVMe over Fabrics does someone want to go after, right? The TCP use case for Fabrics was much more about people had deployed NICs that didn't have RDMA, that had TCP, that wanted to utilize an update to NVMe. And so that really drove them towards an NVMe over Fabrics with TCP. So I see exactly what you're describing. Does a hyperscaler or an enterprise vendor have such an infrastructure that it would guide them towards one plan or another plan? And absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge for the bigger organizations like that, isn't it? I mean, when your estate is into the millions of individual devices, that's quite a challenge. But then at the end of the day, I would say that's part of having a plan that says how you're going to replace things over time. And maybe you do sunset some infrastructure into other areas that you use it, in a different way. It's just part of the upgrade process. Speaking of which, we'd sort of talked about NVMe over Fabrics, but I don't think I really got the entire understanding of how that's changed. It'd just be nice to just go and talk about that again. Specifically, from the point of view that I got the impression, Amber, that you're saying that the features that would be supported in, say, a PCIe device that's running NVMe would be available more for NVMe over Fabrics type environments. Did I misunderstand that?
No, you're correct. So one of the key things we're trying to do is make sure that you can take advantage of zone namespaces, whether it's a PCIe attached or a Fabrics attached, and other features that were listed off. So we're trying to we look at NVMe at a feature and a command level as kind of a language of storage, regardless of what's underneath. And we need to hide what's underneath with clean layering is what we're really trying to bring out. So yeah, we've on NVMe over Fabrics, the key thing that the major update over the past several years has been going from having RDMA as primarily the focus that a lot of people have been focused on, to also adding TCP. And then we've enhanced the other piece we've enhanced over time is some of the discovery mechanisms. So how do I tell what my NVMe over Fabrics infrastructure, when we got started, we did something super simple that wasn't very scalable for understanding if I have a network with thousands or tens of thousands of nodes. So we've added enhancements there, but from a 2.0 perspective, NVMe over Fabrics additions were pretty minor in the grand scheme of things.
So that'd be interesting to see, Martin, this whole idea of DPUs and smart NICs and the ability to pass NVMe over that, which you already have with NVMe over Fabrics, how that will evolve to allow us to do things like looking at devices and saying, well, that device has got that level of endurance. I'll swap things around a bit because that one's wearing. Let's start moving stuff elsewhere. And if you've got things like simple copy in place to allow you to do that at the back end, you can possibly see a bit more of an intelligent storage fabric at the back end there.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to see that happen more and more, and we'll see that as devices wear, they may become read-only devices. We have cases, and certainly in the media world, we have quite a lot of cases where we'd rather have things as a read-only device, and as it were, and it just allows enterprise customers or any customer to sweat their asset more. You never need less storage, and working in media, I tell you, nobody ever deletes anything anyway. So you might as well just, as long as you know it's going to be relatively safe, you'll keep it there, but you're never going to overwrite it, so just leave it.
Yeah, true. How will the NVMe 2.0 features be rolled out? When will we expect to see them, and how do they sort of come out so that they're available in both devices and in the operating system?
Yeah, so we've had work going on in the open source and with major OS vendors for some time on things like zone namespaces, and so you'll see those start to come out of that type of support being mentioned in those driver stacks. And then really what I think you'll see is it's really going to be a case-by-case basis. Obviously, if your end is a hard drive, right, that's a different of what comes in and at what time than something else. So if I think about, you're going to have near-term deployments that will really pick up things like the simple copy command or the multiple controller shutdown type of features. And then where you'll end up is there's going to be, you know, it's probably not going to be the same device that's a key value that somebody's bringing out versus a zone namespace device. I think you'll definitely see, for example, zone namespace and endurance group management potentially coming out in the same device. But you'll see these groupings of what features make sense for what device and for what market segment. I think you will start to see deployments already this year, especially of things like key value and zone namespaces.
Okay. And at the end of the day, you might support 2.0, but you don't necessarily have to support all the features of 2.0.
Exactly. That's been our the entire time is ever since 1.0 is really having extremely small numbers of mandatory features. And we've continued that it's pretty much an optional collection of where do you want to, what market segment are you in, what value are you trying to provide, and what features do you want to support?
Ultimately, I guess you develop a standard. The standard is adoptable by vendors, and then the vendors build their own timeline around the availability of that standard and the fact that the standard is GA, and then they choose to adopt in their devices going forward.
Exactly. And usually, as in most standards organizations, the companies that were most involved in driving particular features often are driving that because they have an internal development going. So I would expect in some of these cases, the lead proponents of a particular feature may be having a launch pretty soon.
Right. Okay. Ooh, okay. So we can take that as a little bit of not a spoiler alert, but at least and something we can look at and follow. So I just want to dive down and maybe talk about where we go next, because obviously there's continuous evolution. You'll have a lovely, massively long roadmap to develop and keep on going. What sort of things can we expect to see in the future, and where can we sort of see things headed without you giving away too much that you're not allowed to give away?
I think it's what we already touched about earlier on in the podcast about computational storage. That's really where we're seeing the major investment, the major next phase of NVMe, and where does storage head as we look at all these accelerators that we're all living through, and how does all of this come together in a programmable way that we can get the maximum benefit? So I think anyone's welcome to join the NVM Express working group, and computational storage is, we have an active spec development going on there. And so that's what I think you're likely to see from us in late 22 or early first half of 23 is that specification coming to market. And I would expect some interesting things to come along to market with it.
Interesting. Martin, this is going to be, I think, one of the more interesting areas of storage in the next couple of years, probably one where we'll probably find ourselves talking about more and more.
We've talked about it quite a lot over the past two, three years.
That is true, we have.
And yeah, it seems to be one of those things which is happening. I think we're beginning to understand what it means, what computational storage is. I think it was, certainly from our point of view, it took us a while to really think, okay, what does this really mean? How's it going to work? And I think, obviously, we're seeing things happening in NVMe 2.0. We're going to see, we're going to see the mechanisms for it to be used in a standard, more standard way. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is definitely something that we've been sort of thinking about. How is this going to happen? You know, how are we going to start to see some of this standardization come along? And you highlighted two of the most obvious things earlier on. You know, people are will look at things like encryption and compression, because those are quite easy to offload. You know, at the end of the day, that can be entirely proprietary on that card the vendor can do that without any sort of need to actually offer any insight as to how those tasks are being executed, because at the end of the day, they still just provide an interface up, which is just an NVMe device. How the compression goes on is, you know, nobody's business but theirs in some respects. But as this becomes more standardized, clearly that is going to be more important, especially when you start looking at fabrics and multiple device types. So your sort of key to helping, I think, some of the future developments of where we're headed with storage, because without it, without that standardization, we're really going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think that it's a really interesting time. And I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier of you need to understand the structure in order to be able to perform some of these operations like compression and searches and other things, filters. And that's where it's going to be really interesting of how do we convey the information of this is what that the data structure you're dealing with is like. Because obviously, if I'm an SSD vendor, I don't know how somebody landed data on in what structure. And so that's going to be really critical of allowing the SSD vendors to provide a lot of value, but them not necessarily knowing a priori what those data structures are like. So how do we thread that needle? So it's going to be fun.
It certainly is. So if people would like to learn a bit more about the standard, just generally, you know, get involved, like you said, where should we point them towards?
Go to nvmexpress.org and it has everything you need.
Perfect. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes. And we need to make sure that we don't leave it another 3 years before we meet up again.
Because, absolutely. I'm hoping to see you physically face to face in 2022. I miss hanging out.
So. I'm guessing that there won't be anything physical this year in terms of Flash Memory Summit. And it will be next year that it'll be kicking off again. I'm definitely looking forward to getting back to it. But for now, Amber, thank you very much for joining us. It's been really interesting and definitely look forward to catching up again.
Thank you so much for having me and thanks for your time.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.